On this week in our prize tech, we have Mr. Curtis Franklin on the show today. Now, we're going to talk about a new survey that's saying, finally, the C-suite is putting stake into Zero Trust in 2022. We'll talk about how that's possible. Plus, we're going to talk about all about RSA. We have Principal Architect at Auth0, Mr. Vittorio Bertocci. He's going to talk about RSA, themes and trends, maybe even things that were missed. You definitely shouldn't miss it. Quiet on the set.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This is TWiT, This Week in Enterprise Tech, episode 497, recorded June 10th, 2022. Infinite data, zero trust. This episode of This Week in Enterprise Tech is brought to you by Bitwarden. Get the password manager that offers a robust and cost-effective solution that can drastically increase your chances of staying safe online. Get started with a free trial of Teams or Enterprise Plan, or get started for free across all devices as an individual user at bitwarden.com/twit. And by Plextrack, the proactive security management platform. Save time and increase productivity with the premier cybersecurity reporting and workflow management product designed to support the complete security lifecycle from assessment through remediation. Visit plextrack.com/twit to claim your free month. And by IT Pro TV. Give your team an engaging IT development platform to level up their skills. Volume discounts start at 5 seats. Go to itpro.tv/enterprise. Make sure to mention Enterprise 30 to your designated IT Pro TV account executive to get 30% off or more on a business plan. Welcome to TWiT, This Week in Enterprise Tech, the show that is dedicated to you, the enterprise professional, the IT pro, and that geek who just wants to know how this world's connected. I'm your host, Louis Maresca, your guide through the big world of the enterprise. But I definitely can't guide you by myself. I need to bring in a professional and an expert in their field. And today we have senior analyst at Omdia and our security enterprise expert, Mr. Curtis Franklin. Curtis, you have many names today, I think. You're the happy traveler, the survivor of RSA, the survivor of Denver Airport. Anything else in there we should call you?
I don't know that I've actually survived anything else yet. The jury's still out on so many things.
I bet you have had plenty of trips going on there. Any words of wisdom when you're traveling to a conference?
Seriously. It's fun to be back in the real world again, because you do get to see people, talk to people, have conversations. As an example, this was the first time that our current team of analysts had ever gotten together in one place. So I would say easily half the team. It was the first time we were meeting the other members in real space. So that was magnificent and wonderful. For traveling, though, pack patience and be prepared for delays. Those are the big things, because by golly, unless you're super lucky, there are going to be some kinks thrown into the plans.
Well, thanks, Curtis. We're definitely going to talk about RSA Conf today on the show. We have Principal Architect from Auth0, Mr. Vittorio Bertocci. We're going to talk about all things RSA, themes, trends, and maybe even some things that were actually missed. Plus, our news bite today, we have another security topic. We're going to talk about the new survey that's finally saying that C-suite is putting zero trust into the driver's seat in 2022. Full 77% of them say they're going to increase spending there. We'll definitely see if that's true and how they're going to do that. But first, lots of things going around in the news this week for the enterprise. So let's go ahead and jump into this week's news blips. Now, most people check their devices and machines on a regular basis for updates, although too often we hear a lot about people getting exploited because they don't do that. Now, the one thing they don't do enough of is check their routers. That's right, their routers for an update. Now, if you're lucky, you have some recent technology that actually updates your router firmware and hardware automatically, but most don't have that. Now, cyber criminals target routers largely for two reasons. First, because all network traffic goes through these things. Second, you can't scan a router with a regular antivirus or any other tool that's out there. So malware that has set up shop in the router has plenty of opportunities to attack and less chance of being detected, let alone actually removed or deleted. And the first thing cyber criminals do majority of them actually do, is infect the router to join a botnet. Now, users of the device will have no idea it's on there. In fact, the router is used in a botnet as a part of an attack. Users would just see really slow down of their internet. They won't see any other byproducts of that. And that's why it's really hard for you to know what's going on. Now, the two most common botnets are Mirai and Meris. Now, Mirai is the most prominent. In fact, it's infecting routers, cameras, smart TVs, IoT devices. And in fact, it's really kind of carries out large-scale DDoS attacks. Now, the second thing attackers do is steal your data. That's right. They sift through traffic looking for financial data, passwords, and other things they can either sell or use for further attacks. Now, the next thing is they will spoof your websites that you visit. This way, they have a way to collect more data from you. So if you go to a special website that you normally go to and enter your password or whatnot, they can redirect your DNS calls to make the ones that they want you to see instead. And you might be asking, how does malware actually get on the device, right, on the router? The number one reason is the device has been exposed to the internet and it has a weak password. That's right. They guess their way in. So the second way is highly probable is that they're actually exploiting a vulnerability on the device that hasn't been patched. Now, according to research, several hundred new vulnerabilities have been discovered in the routers in the past 2 years. Now, the best way to protect yourself is another good question. First, at least once a week, check for updates to your router. I do it even though I actually have auto updates on my device. I check every week. Now, second, create a better admin password or even just disable remote access. And then third, set up your Wi-Fi to be hard to break into and set up guest networks for roaming or infrequent devices like in-laws. Plus, use a VPN app. Of course, this may sound like a broken record to you. However, that means that someday we may just get everyone doing it in order to secure things better. One hopes.
Well, let me start with a bad news trifecta. There's new malware. It targets Linux. And it's almost impossible to detect. Hey, have a great weekend, everyone. No, seriously, Symbiote malware, which has been found in the wild attacking financial institutions, contains stealthy rootkit capabilities. This new variant allows for remote access to victims' machines and disguises itself so well that the researchers who found it and are studying it say they can't figure out whether it's being used in targeted campaigns or something larger scale. So security researchers from Intezer and from BlackBerry's research and intelligence team tell us that the Symbiote malware is unusual because it's not a pure executable file. It's a shared object library that loads itself into a machine's running processes using the ld_preload file in Linux. Once loaded, the library allows the attacker to steal credentials and gain unauthorized access, but that's not all. The malware also provides a backdoor for the threat actor to log in as any user on the machine with a hard-coded password so they can execute commands with the highest privileges. And just to make life complete, performing live forensics on an infected machine may not turn anything up, since all the file, processes, and network artifacts are hidden by the malware. Now, Symbiote was first discovered attacking financial institutions in South America in 2021, but there's nothing in its design that restricts it to that geography. Researchers say that looking for anomalous DNS requests may be the only indicator that something's wrong. Oh, great. Yet another log file for security analysts to comb through in their copious spare time.
Apple has built a better CPU, the M1 and the M2. Now, that also means that it's a target for researchers and attackers alike. That's right. In this current article over here at TechCrunch, we talk a little bit about there might be some problems there, unfortunately. Now, in this case, we're looking at a vulnerability in the CPU that is not patchable, and that can give them a leg up and fame and fortune if you're a researcher or an attacker alike. Unfortunately, according to the latest reports, Apple's M1 chip has an unpatchable hardware vulnerability that can allow attackers to break through its last line of security defenses. Now, according to MIT researchers, they've discovered the vulnerability lies in the hardware-level security mechanism utilized in Apple M1 chips called pointer authentication codes, or PAC. Now, PAC is supposed to make it harder for an attacker to inject malicious code into a device's memory. Plus, it also provides a level of defense against buffer overflow exploits. Now, researchers from MIT's Computer Science and Artificial Intelligence Laboratory have created a novel hardware attack which combines memory corruption and speculative execution attacks to sidestep this particular security feature. Now, the attack proves out that pointer authentication can be defeated without leaving a trace, and it utilizes a hardware mechanism. So there's no patch that can fix it. Nothing can fix it. Now, the attack called Pac-Man, it's a great name, works by guessing, that's right, guessing a pointer authentication code, PAC, a cryptographic signature that confirms that an app hasn't been maliciously altered. Now, this attack works for not only apps, but it also for kernel code as well. That's not good. That means apps and new code are not signed appropriately and can circumvent the protections. Now, Apple has implemented pointer authentication on all of its custom ARM-based silicon so far, including the M1, the M1 Pro, and the M1 Max. Yikes. Now, what does this mean for owners? Well, this means that Apple devices with this chip are not invulnerable, if they ever were, and it also means that they can't be made not vulnerable. Now, the question is, how will this hurt their business going forward, and if the M2 has the same problem?
Well, we've been giving you nothing but doom and gloom, and, well, why should this blip be any different? According to a joint alert from Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, or CISA, the NSA and the FBI, cyber attackers affiliated with China are actively building out a large attack infrastructure by compromising targets in both public and private arenas. The alert says that the attackers are targeting major telecom companies and network service providers with a set of exploits for known vulnerabilities in a variety of routers, VPNs, and other networking gear, along with network-attached storage devices. Once compromised, the network devices are used as access points to route command and control traffic and act as midpoints to carry out network intrusions on other entities. The attackers are assumed to be Chinese connected because they conduct all their intrusions by accessing compromised servers called hop points from numerous China-based IP addresses resolving to different Chinese ISPs. They use these servers to register and access operational email accounts, host C2 domains, and interact with victim networks. Now, conveniently for the attackers, the same servers are useful as obfuscation tools when defenders go looking for attack origin points. Defending against the attacks is about as complicated as brushing your teeth and washing your hands. The agencies say that users should apply available patches, disable unnecessary ports and protocols, and replace end-of-life infrastructure.
Well, folks, that does it for the blips. Next up, the News Bites. But before we get to the News Bites, we do have to thank a really great sponsor of this week, Enterprise Tech, and that's Bitwarden. Now, we talk a lot about cyber threats on this show, and a lot of them are actually exploits due to passwords. And it comes up in the news often. Now, one way to increase your security posture here is to use a password manager. Now, Bitwarden is the only open source cross-platform password manager that can be used at home, at work, or on the go, and is trusted by millions. Now, with Bitwarden, you can securely store credentials across personal and business worlds. Every Bitwarden account begins with the creation of a personal vault. Now, Bitwarden has big news. That's right. After launching the username generator last month, they're integrating with three popular email forwarding services that also happen to be open source. That's right. Simple Login, Anon Addy, and Firefox Relay. Now, adding another layer of security and privacy is easier than ever with this. When using Bitwarden to generate a new username, the option to create an email alias is actually presented with a sub-selection for choosing your preferred service. Now, just enter the API key for your individual account with the chosen service, select the desired option, and once generated, a new alias is instantly registered to your account. Super cool. Now, using unique usernames, email addresses, and passwords for every account is a powerful method for increasing internet security and privacy, and it adds protection to logins in the face of data breaches and leaks. Now, this feature will be available on the Web Vault, desktop app, and browser extensions, with mobile planned for a future release coming soon. Now, Bitwarden is a must for your business. It's fully customizable and adapts to your business needs. Now, use Bitwarden Send, fully encrypted method to transmit sensitive information, whether text or files. Generate unique and secure passwords for every site with enterprise-grade security. That's GDPR, CCPA, HIPAA, and SOC 2 compliant. Now, their end-to-end encrypted vault helps mitigate phishing attacks as well. Now, their team's organization option is just $3 a month per user. Share private data securely with coworkers, whether it's across departments or the entire company. enterprises can use Bitwarden Enterprise Organization Plan for just $5 a month per user. Individuals can use their basic free account forever for an unlimited number of passwords or upgrade anytime to their premium account for less than a dollar a month. Now, their family organization option gives up to 6 users premium features for only $3.33 a month. At Twit, we are fans of password managers. Bitwarden is the only open source cross-platform password manager that can be used at home, on the go, or at work, and it's trusted by millions of individuals, teams, and organizations worldwide. Get started with a free trial or a Teams or enterprise plan, or get started for free across all devices as an individual user at bitwarden.com/twit. That's bitwarden.com/twit. And we thank Bitwarden for their support of This Week in Enterprise Tech. Well, folks, it's now time for the Bites. Now, a new survey is saying, finally, that the C-suite is putting together and putting stake in the zero trust in 2022. In fact, 77% of those executives said they're actually going to increase the spending here. Curtis, what's going on there?
Well, in the simplest sense, executive leaders have learned a new buzz phrase. They have learned zero trust. And whether they understand it or not, they do understand that it should help their security. And since more and more security officers are translating security into risk and risk into dollars, this is getting their attention. According to the Cloud Security Alliance, a new survey of theirs shows that 80% of CXO technology leaders report that zero trust is a significant priority. 77% of those executives say they're going to increase spending on zero trust to support it as a priority. And the added zero trust funding is going to be significant because more than 2 in 5 of the executive surveys said that the spending was going to go up 26% or more. So the fact that they're still spending money on it, you don't, for example, see these sorts of numbers when you ask, are you going to spend money on new firewalls? It shows that zero trust is relatively new as a cybersecurity roadmap for most organizations. More than half of the organizations say that their initial implementations of zero trust were started less than 2 years ago. Now, which standard are they using? What a good question. They have an even distribution of planning sources and standards from CISA, Forrester, ZTX, IEEE, NIST, CSA, and more. CISA is the front runner. About a third say that they'll use that. But again, it's all over the map. So what is zero trust? Now, zero trust tries to replace the traditional model of security. That's the one that's the M&M model. Remember, hard, crunchy exterior with the soft, chewy, delicious middle that the attackers love to reach. Well, zero trust recognizes that the attackers were getting to that delicious middle far too often. So what zero trust does is assume, basically, that breaches are going to happen at the perimeter. And with zero trust, you try to limit the damage that can be done. And there are a bunch of individual strategic pieces that go into this. They include, but are not limited to, least privilege, micro-segmentation, various authentication methods, including multi-factor. They're just all sorts of things, but they're designed to make it so that if an attacker gets into a particular point on the network, it's much more difficult for them to spread laterally into the entire network. And it's not just the network. It's also the entire application delivery network for the enterprise. Now, I want to bring my co-host Lou into this because, Lou, you design applications. And we're talking about zero trust from an application delivery network point of view. So do issues like privilege come into play at the application layer?
I think this is an interesting question. I think obviously, whether it's services or clients, I think it does. I think, like, for instance, you know, if you're going to ensure that your application is secure, it's going to want to not only check identity and ensure that you have access to the service or client, but in the same sense, ensure at the client layer that you have access to particular data that you're trying to access. So whether it's, you know, client data that's, you know, pulling data from, you know, a service or database, you're having that segmentation there as well. So, you know, there's a lot of times where you connect to a service and you're, you know, reading something or ingesting some information, and then you click on another link or you access another piece of data, and then it asks for you to kind of do your MDF again, using your authenticator or whatnot. And I think that's a lot of times that's just that application being cognizant of the fact that there's, you're accessing more sensitive data and it might be part of another subsystem. And so I need to redo and make sure that you really do have access or it hasn't changed since the last time you accessed the application or so on. So I think at the application level, it's definitely very prominent when it comes to verifying that.
Well, one of the things that we also get into is the idea of zero trust and least privilege for administration. Because one of the most common reasons for people to say they need admin privilege on their machine is they want to install a new piece of software. Or, you know, here, let's be honest, given the system, sometimes they say, I'm going to the West Coast, I just want to change the clock. And they need admin privileges. You know, is there a good solution for just handing out admin privileges willy-nilly to keep people from complaining? Or do we simply tell them, I'm sorry, you'll take what we give you and you'll be happy with it. And, you know, let the chips fall where they may from the user unhappiness point of view.
That's a good question. I've dealt with organizations that have done both. And in fact, that some financial organizations say, sorry, you know, take it with a grain of salt here and deal with it. The fact that we're not going to give you the privileges, you just can't install anything or whatnot. Now, some organizations, they actually go to, we like to call JIT admin access, which is just in time admin access, which means they have to verify a bunch of things before they give you the access to do so. And that might be installing something on your device or, so again, it's, they're revalidating who you are, your identity, as well as what you have access to do. If it's actually your device and it's actually you, your presence, and then making sure that if you do that, then they allow you to do some work and install some things that you normally can do. And I think I like that model, although it's slightly disruptive. It is a preventative measure to say, almost a deterrent in some sense of doing some of those things. But it also gives them access with having some policy and some compromise for the user. And I think combining those two things, one, it slows down people trying to do it. But it also means that when they do it, there's a way for them to audit backwards saying, okay, who actually did this? And why did they do it? And was it actually them? And so I think it really helps for that as well. And I like that model a lot more than trying to just give a password or a way for them to escalate their privileges on a machine without doing that. And I think that's the model I'd like to see going forward.
You know, I agree that that's a very good model. And it gets down to the issue of not how much we trust you, but how much we trust someone who might somehow get a hold of your account credentials.
Right.
We you know, as our employee, we trust you implicitly. Boy, we'd let you administer anything because we love you so much. But someone from another country, another company who might somehow, through means we can't even imagine, get a hold of your credentials, we don't trust them. And it's that balance of trusting you but not the illicit user of your account that makes it so difficult. You know, Lou, last question. We often talk about zero trust in terms of just people, but it's not just people. because it's processes and applications and machines as well. And it's less and less likely that every single component of an application is going to live on one piece of hardware or one operating system instance. So, you know, how difficult would it be, or is it, to make the communication between application pieces secure so that if, say, an attacker somehow compromises block A of an application, that doesn't instantly give them a way to transit to block B, which may live in the cloud or on a server or somewhere else?
It depends on how the application's broken down. You know, obviously, and if you're working on an operating system that loads most things into memory, and, you know, and they will load things from, they'll page data from disk, you know, there's times where it's hard to segment that. And if they get access to one part of the application, you know, they normally have direct access to the other parts. I would say, going back to your original comment around how easy is it to implement zero trust at an application layer, that's where the application or the service has to be cognizant of the fact that there are layers within the application and the service, and that when, if there is a part of it that is compromised, they need to make sure that there needs to be another secured layer within there that needs to be verified in order to access the next part, which means that prevents access from other things, whether it's sensitive data. Like, I'll give an example. You're in a financial application and you're looking at the general ledger of of an organization, and then you try to click over and start looking at their inventory. Well, those are two different systems within an application, which means those should probably be secured in different ways. You know, obviously somebody shouldn't have access to inventory that might have access to their general ledger. And so I think I would say that there is definitely needs to be some architecture there that organizations and applications follow. Can this automatically be done? Sometimes no. I think applications are so complex that they just can't, and like I said, there's a lot of legacy out there that just don't really, are not aware of this. And eventually, if you do get access to them, you get access to other things.
But wait, all legacy applications are perfectly safe and secure because they run on on mainframes, right? I mean, that's what
right.
we're told.
That's
there's
right.
never any danger there. Well, you know, the fact is that this is a solution to a very real problem. It's also early days. So I think I feel very secure in saying that the zero trust that we understand today is not the same zero trust that we'll be talking about in 5 years. There's going to be evolution. There's going to be development. There are going to be new understandings that come both from successful attacks against parts of zero trust and feedback from both users and security professionals. So we're going to be talking about this for a long time. Hope you enjoyed the conversation. And speaking of enjoying, we've got more coming with a very enjoyable guest. I was having fun talking with him before the episode, but I think Lou needs to tell us about another advertiser before we even get there.
Thank you, Curtis. That's right. Next up, we bring in a guest who drops knowledge on the Twilight. All right, we're going to talk a little bit more about RSA. We're going to have Mr. Vittorio Bertocci here as well from Auth0. But before we get to all that goodness, we do have to thank another great sponsor of This Week in Enterprise Tech, and that's PlexTrack, the premier cybersecurity reporting and workflow management platform that empowers teams to win the right security battles. Now, what if you could streamline the communication across the entire security department so that every team member can do their job more efficiently? Now, from simplified data aggregation and reporting to integrated ticketing for remediation to analytics and visualizations for board reporting, PlexTrack touches every aspect of the security management workflow. Now, gain a real-time view of your security posture by bringing all of your data sources together in one powerful platform where you can triage scanner results, generate powerful analytics and visualizations, assign remediation tasks, attest your posture, and even track progress over time. As a satisfied PlexTrack client put it, we see PlexTrack as a part of our strategy to move quicker and be proactive. Now we have a real-time view of what we need to focus on, and I have an easy way of showing senior leadership. FlexJack serves every aspect of the Enterprise Security Team program with features designed to improve workflow, collaboration, and communication for each role, including Red Team data aggregation. Import data from all of your automated vulnerability scanners and tools, triage and report results in half the time. They also have Blue Team remediation, assign remediation tasks right on the platform or through simple integrations with the ticketing tools your team already uses and track progress over time. They also have stakeholder communication. Use powerful yet simple analytics to attest to security posture and prioritize issues. Tailor attestation and communication to the needs of both team members and the C-suite. Continuous purple teaming assessments. Begin purple teaming or power up your current strategies with Runbooks, the best in industry tool for test plan execution. Security teams of all sizes and maturities can maximize the efficiency and effectiveness of their workflows with FlexTrack. Customers report that they see FlexTrack as part of our strategy to move quicker and be proactive, and that the platform has a 5x return on investment in year one, and that it gives their cybersecurity operations a 30% increase in efficiency. FlexTrack improves the entire security engagement lifecycle by making it easy to generate security reports, to deliver them securely, and track the issues to completion straight from the platform. Book a demo today. Try FlexTrack free for 1 month and see how it can change your life as a security professional. Simply go to FlexTrack.com/twit and claim your free month. That's FlexTrack.com/twit, T-W-I-T. And we thank FlexTrack for their support of this week in Enterprise Tech. Well, folks, it's my favorite part of the show. We actually get to bring in a guest to drop some knowledge on the Twilight Ride. And this week we have a treat because he's not only a friend of mine and a past peer at Microsoft, but he's the principal architect at Auth0, where he focuses on product innovation and also spends a good amount of time on standards. And he is Mr. Vittorio Bertucci. Welcome to the show, Vittorio. Buongiorno.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Now, how did I do? Did I get the pronunciation right?
So close.
Okay.
Thank you.
I'll try harder.
Now, don't worry. It was perfect.
All right, perfect. So I would love to be spending time, maybe even just talking about the Amalfi Coast with you, but we have lots to talk about here, lots to talk about from RSA last week with some interesting stuff that came out. Obviously, we talk a lot about security on the show, but last week, the RSA conference concluded with a lot of things that they talked about and maybe even not even talked about there. And so that means that we have lots to talk about here. Now, we heard that the buzz on the show floor there was actually some things that were going on around aligning the organization's security priorities with the right technology. But I wanted to hear both from Curtis and from Vittorio around just around what they thought the themes were and maybe some of the trends they heard. Maybe start with you, Vittorio.
Yeah. I'd say that, so first, everyone appeared to be stoked to finally be in 3D in person and having like living and breathing people around them. It was fun to see people saying, I didn't realize you were this tall or this short, because Zoom never tells you that. But in general, I'm partial to the trends, which were mostly about identity, because that is the angle. Like, RSA is gargantuan, so you have to choose your path across so many different things. And to me, the biggest thing was probably the passkey thing, like a FIDO passkey, like a multi-device credentials. And the thing is, it was announced a couple of months ago, but of course, as soon as Apple touched it, it became mainstream. And so people talked a lot about it. And there was an entire half day of a seminar that the FIDO Alliance presented, which was very, very informative and very well attended. And besides that, there were a lot of things about like bot detection or humans versus bot, you know, after Musk decided to talk about it again. You know, that for us, security and identity people, we are not often spoken about in mainstream media. And so when something, it's something that we can talk about with our relatives and non-technical people, then it suddenly becomes very important. And this was no exception. There were a lot of discussions about automated attacks, distinguishing humans from others, bot detection, all of those things. And one thing that was notably absent, and then I'll give the baton to Curtis was, I know that a lot of people are going to give me bad stuff on Twitter because of this, but Web3, if you go on the agenda and you search for Web3, there is nothing. And if you search for crypto, you find a lot of instances of the old meaning, cryptography, not cryptocurrency. And if you search for a blockchain, there are five sessions which are like cover it. But the main point is they show, and also if you walk through the huge expo hall, you didn't see much of that. Like I was just coming from other conferences in the identity space, like the European Identity Conference, in which the decentralized identity was prominent. And instead in there was nearly absent. There was one session from a very good friend of mine, George Fletcher, who is an architect in Capital One. And George has been doing the same session for a few years. And basically he describes what would happen if you would truly try to implement decentralized identity as a relying party, so as a application. And through the years, you have seen this session evolve. So now it's more possible than it was before it was pure hype. Now it's more realistic, but big problems remain. So if anyone in the audience has the chance to catch the recordings of the RSA, I highly recommend that session because it's a no-nonsense coverage of that of the topic.
Thank you. Yeah, I thought a lot about identity for security. So that's a very interesting topic. Maybe we should even get into it. Thank you, Vitaria. So yeah, Curtis, same question to you. What did you hear? Some trends, some things that were going on?
Well, the main thing that I saw is exactly the same as Vittorio's first. The fact that people loved being face-to-face. And he's right. They were almost giddy coming in and talking. I will say for those keeping score that the number of people choosing to wear masks on the show floor, I would put at sub 10%. And the people correctly wearing masks, somewhere in the sub 5%. There were quite a number of well-protected chins on the floor. People just, if they're worried about it, it's not enough to give up the face-to-face contact. So I think that's number one. And, that worried about it, but only so much, was a theme that extended to other things. Now, Vittorio's also right. The identity is very important, largely because the end user is defining the new edge. That's where your network perimeter is. It's your users. So there's a lot in authentication. There's a lot of talk around zero trust, although I think zero trust is wrong calling it diminished trust. Reduced trust is probably more accurate if you want to get really technical, but it's requiring more authentication, both more rigorous authentication of the user and their device, and more frequent authentication, although some of that will be mitigated by single sign-on with some of the companies. The edge was important. People talking about both what could be done and what cannot reasonably be done at the edge. And finally, you heard a lot of discussions that initially surprised me, because you had companies saying things like, the cloud, we think it's going to be really important. And when you dig down a little bit deeper, what you realize is that there are vendors out there who perhaps over the past half dozen years have deployed in the cloud, but have maintained on-prem appliance-based deployments. And what they're finding is that they have warehouses full of appliances, so they're going to stop selling those and go all in on the cloud now. And while they're doing that, and some of the others who had gone already to the cloud, they're going back and looking at the lessons they've learned over the last half dozen years. And so now they are doing their 2.0 or even 3.0 deployments, where they are refining the architecture, where they are bringing in some of the new capabilities, and feeling like, in some cases, for the first time, they are truly getting security by, from, and of the cloud right.
Right, right. It's interesting. I think there, I want to talk a little bit about some of the technologies that we actually, you guys were hearing about, and maybe, and in fact, Victoria's brought it up in the beginning. Yeah, obviously two-step, two factors, a lot harder to hack, a lot harder to compromise, and we're hearing a lot more about this. We heard about text messaging, obviously, authentication apps, push notifications. But then there's this new thing, like you said, the FIDO key. Can you maybe tell us a little bit more about that and just why it's becoming more prominent?
Absolutely. So here is the general idea. The FIDO Alliance started years ago with this mission of getting rid of passwords. And in so doing, managed to do something which is almost miraculous, which is to align operating system vendors and browser vendors, because like in order for these to work, you need pretty much everyone on board. And they created these two authenticators. One is the technically called the roaming authenticator, which is like the YubiKey. It's a YubiKey is a good example of this. It's a classic device that you would use as an administrator to actually connect hardware to your device before checking in code and stuff like that. And then there was another one, the platform authenticator, which instead leveraged the capability of devices. So you know that your computer has a TPM, a secure enclave, or your Android phone also have a secure element, and you can use the cryptographic capabilities of that device to sign in. And in fact, like when you do like biometric, like your face ID or your thumb, like often all you are doing is in fact unlocking those keys that live on the device. And so this has been around for a while, but the challenge of this for reaching consumers is that both things are hard to use, because for the key, try convincing your senior citizen relative to bring out a key around. They won't. And for the devices, the challenge is we all hold many devices. And so even if you manage to convince people to register one device, then they always have the other one. And once you lose this device, or once you buy a new device, then using that authenticator is difficult. So what happened is that some vendors, and in particular Apple, Microsoft, and Google, decided to take the capability of using a device key and extend it to a collection of devices. So imagine that you have your iPhone, your iPad, and your Mac. You sign in all of those using your iCloud. And now imagine that you land on a website, and this website says, huh, I see that your device is capable of doing this magic. Would you like to use this password, to sign in on the website? And then once you do so, your machine creates a key locally to your device, and then this key roams across your iCloud. Or if you have done this in Google, within the Google ecosystem, in Microsoft, within the Microsoft ecosystem. And so now, if you pick another device, you'll be able to already use that key already from the other device without having to re-register. And if you lose your devices, you have a backup of this key in the cloud. So personally, after a couple of decades in this space, and every year hearing someone saying, this year, the password is dead, I think I've never been as optimistic as I am right now about our ability with this new technology to actually get rid of passwords also for consumers.
Now, is this encrypted at the client level? Like, what stops somebody from doing like a man-in-the-middle attack where they can acquire this key since it's being transferred in between services and client? Do you know?
So for technical details, we can point to documentation similar, but man-in-the-middle won't work because they use the key on the device rather than ever sending it. And this is all predicated on the cryptographic capability of a device. Like you have a secure enclave. And if you look at WebAuthn, which is the web version of the FIDO protocol, basically, you'll see that it's all based on challenges. Like when you land on the website and you say, dear website, I want to do X, the website sends you back a challenge, which is just a bunch of bits. You use your local crypto capabilities to do something with this, like signing it and similar. And then you send it together with basically a public key. Now, I'm butchering this, but like just for the for this context. And now the website verifies that, yes, you are the owner of a corresponding private key of a public key that you just sent. And so it says, okay, now I'll save this public key. And next time you want to sign in, I'll give you a challenge and you'll demonstrate that you own the corresponding private key. So no private key ever leaves your device. And then actually not technically true. It never leaves your device when you are signing in, but now it will roam within within iCloud, for example. And then the way in which it is secured, it is the same way or whatever the vendor decides it will be for how they do today roaming of sensitive information.
Fantastic. Well, we have lots more to talk about because there's lots more going on at RSA, a lot more trends. We'll talk a little bit more about technology, even some risk assessment and so on. But before we get to that, we do have to thank another great sponsor of This Week in Enterprise Tech, and that's IT Pro TV. Now, your IT team needs the skills and knowledge to ensure your business is a success. And with IT Pro TV, more than 80% of users, 80% who start a video actually finish it. That's right. IT Pro TV is engaging and your team will enjoy learning on their platform of choice. Now, give your team the tools they need to make your business thrive. Courses are entertaining and binge worthy, keeping your team interested and vested in learning. Now, the tech industry is evolving, changing rapidly, and your team needs to be trained today. Now, when a new software release or system upgrade or cyber threat faces your business, IT Pro TV offers the training and perspectives of those disruptions within days, if not hours. Now, why is IT Pro TV right for your business? Well, get all training and certifications for your team done all in one place. IT Pro TV has every vendor and skill you need for your IT team training. They provide Microsoft IT training, Cisco training, Linux training, Apple training, security and cloud, and so much more. More than 5,800 hours worth, ranging from technical skills to compliance to soft skills. Now, you can do so much with IT Pro TV business plans. Track your team's results. That's right. Manage your seats, assign and unsign team members, and access monthly usage reports. See metrics that matter, like logins, viewing times, tracks completed, and much more. In fact, easily manage your teams. Manage subsets of users or teams by providing them with customized assignments, monitoring progress, and reporting on usage of the platform. Assignments can be full courses and they can be individual episodes as well from those courses. Now, advanced reporting is also a feature. Get immediate insight into your team's viewing patterns and progress over time, and also visual reports. Don't forget that IT Pro TV has individual plans as well. Give your team the IT development platform they need to level up their skills while enjoying the journey. For teams of 2 to 1,000, volume discounts start at just 5 seats. Go to itpro.tv/enterprise. Make sure to mention Enterprise 30 to your designated IT Pro TV account executive to get 30% off or more on a business plan. And we thank IT Pro TV for their support of This Week in Enterprise Tech. Well, folks, we've been talking about RSA, and we have Mr. Vittorio Bertocci. How did I do? I do better?
Perfect. Absolutely perfect.
All right. And as well as Mr. Curtis Franklin talking RSA. Curtis, I want to get your thoughts as well. Obviously, we hear a lot about technology on the floor. You know, I have a huge laundry list of stuff that I was hearing about people releasing new things like AppGate and Armis and Fortinet. But what did you, what are some of the things and some of the trends from a technology perspective were you hearing?
Well, from a technology perspective, one of the big words that continues to be at the forefront of the industry is visibility, because companies just don't know what is inside their network. I had a conversation with one person who said they had a sales call with the CISO of a very large entertainment company that everyone would know. And he asked, to start with, how many devices do you have on your network? He said that they looked at him and started laughing. He said, you've got to be kidding. I have no way of knowing. So something as simple as how many endpoints are on your device or on your network is something that for an enterprise class network is seen as essentially unknowable. Now you add to that things like how many cloud services are you using? How many cloud applications are you using? And the answer is we have no idea. Any security professional will tell you that while you might not have an idea, there are threat actors who are willing to put in the time, the technology, and the sheer patience to figure it out. And the moment that an attacker knows more about your network than you do, you're in danger, in serious danger. So there's a lot of visibility enhancement going on. Companies, services, devices, you name it, that say that they will provide you with greater visibility into what your network consists of. There are a lot of people looking at the everybody's favorite issue, third-party risk, which is not just how much at risk do your suppliers make you, but how much at risk do their suppliers make you, and on and on and on. So visibility was huge. Saw a lot of companies doing various solutions for visibility. Post that, companies saying, all right, now that you know what's on your network, what do you do about it? And finally, the companies that deal with risk, because risk is critical when you're talking to cyber insurance companies, and frequently when you're talking to members of your own executive board, because at least in theory, risk can be translated into dollars. In other words, a change of our risk from X to Y means that we will have to spend a certain number of dollars less on remediating, or we will be able to make a certain amount of dollars more because we're up more of the time. Being able to talk to the board and get more money from them to invest in security is a huge issue, and one that all kinds of companies at RSA were more than happy to talk to you about.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, what Ant's putting up is pretty interesting here, because there was a huge announcement about risk management. The fact that these 30 organizations are signing this pledge, to combat cyber risk and cyber threats and ransomware. So how does that apply to what you're talking about? Is there something special in this pledge that they're pronouncing or they're essentially saying we're going to do this, or is there, it's just in general saying we're going to do the best we can here?
Okay. If you'll recall, back just before bullets started flying in Ukraine, our government sent out what it called a shields up memo to critical infrastructure and other. If you read that shields up, it said essentially, all this security stuff we've been talking to you about for the last 5 years? Well, we really mean it now. And so there's an element of that in the cyber risk thing that, yes, cyber risk is an issue. We recognize that it's an issue, and we want to do things that will help you define your risk in terms of the various aspects of your security infrastructure. Now, it went by really quickly, but in that announcement on the Risk Alliance, there was another word that was being used in all kinds of conversations. It may be one of the new hot buzzwords in the security industry. That word is resilience, because resilience gets to the issue of not only detecting threats and preventing threats, but in remediating quickly and economically the effect of an attack. There you go. Cyber resiliency. thank you, Ant. This is one of those things where resilience has meant a lot of things. It's often in the enterprise been used in conjunction with things like backup and recovery. It has been used with business continuity planning, but now it's becoming part of cybersecurity conversations because it does get to that remediation piece of the problem, since the general acknowledgement is that, you know, if you haven't had a significant cyber attack that's impacted your business, it's just a matter of time.
Fantastic. Thank you, Curtis. Now, Vartari, I want to throw this to you because I don't want to get you in trouble with your Twitterverse followers or whatnot, but I know I saw a tweet by you when it was, you know, during the, again, we can move on to another topic, but I saw a tweet by you that was during the keynote, and you said, hey, you know, obviously the keynote's giving nod to FIDO Alliance and OpenID, but he ruined it just a couple seconds later, a little bit later in the next segment. Would you mean by that? And maybe if you don't want to talk about that, maybe we can talk about just about things that weren't talked about at RSA that should have been.
So let's go with the second question.
Okay.
the thing that I believe was missing, which is like not entirely missing, but I think it would have deserved more time. I'd say like two main ones. One is the multi-cloud thing. Like I completely agree with Curtis that a lot of people kind of like dipped their toe in the cloud and they didn't really put the foot down. And now that's, they are starting to do it. And now we're starting to realize, yeah, got to do it. And you get very often, like when you go there, a lot of people like feel a bit lost saying, okay, now I need to relearn all of this stuff. And so often they get a vertical offers from various cloud vendors, which somehow create a strong dependency on one particular cloud. And in other arenas, people are already starting to realize that multi-cloud is an important strategy because it you retain some degree of optionality, but it's not a trivial strategy. It's something that you needed to actively plan for. And so I'm convinced that times are a bit early, but that like next year at RSA, you'll hear far more of that. And the other, I was listening very intently to Curtis talking about the risk. And yes, the risk is resiliency. Resiliency goes back to the multi-cloud because now if you have your eggs all in a single basket, it's just natural and human that sometimes things do happen on one side. So multi-cloud is a component of resiliency. But the other is that the risk for when you are working with employees, you have a more degree of control over the experiences on which you can ask them to go through because they are in a contract. Like in general, you have a closer relationship. But when it comes to customer identity, which is one of the things that I focus the most, you still need to manage the risk. But at the same time, you cannot ignore the experience because if the experience that you offer isn't good enough for whatever good reason you might think you have because security risk and similar, that is an actual existential threat to the business. Because if people don't sign up, if people find your service too difficult to use, they will not. And if you depend on them doing so, then you're going to be in huge trouble. So I did hear people talking about adaptive MFA. And so it's not like the industry doesn't know about it. It's more that I think that as people dip their toes deeper in the cloud, they'll realize that these two particular elements deserve even more attention. Because if you try to add them as an afterthought, it's going to be very expensive and not very effective. So I think that that's what you will see in the future editions of the show.
Not saying. Same question to you, Curtis. Anything that you saw that might have been not said?
Well, I think the thing that people were sort of talking around, but it's a critical issue, is the issue of scale. And not necessarily the way most people mean it. Generally, when you talk about scale, you're talking about how big will something go. In other words, how many tens of thousands of users can be, or how many, you know, petabytes per day can you analyze, you know, whatever your big thing is. But companies are beginning to realize that the majority of economic interest and economic activity in this country and in most countries are the mid-size to small businesses. So the question is not just how do you make good security affordable in terms of the economic damage it can prevent, but affordable in actual numbers of dollars. Because you can easily say that, you know, our product is affordable because we know that an attack of a certain sort will result in $10,000 per user of damage, and you have 50 users, so that's, you know, $500,000, and we're only charging you $200,000 a year for our license. Well, for a small company, that's still unaffordable. And so companies are beginning to recognize that, and some are coming up with different ways of addressing it. I think that's a very good sign that we're having a little conversation about that. Unfortunately, so much of the innovation in our industry comes from small companies, startups, companies just emerging from stealth. You know, I talked to several companies when I asked them how many customers they had. The answer was 6 or 9 or 13. And if you're going to have 6 customers, they better be pretty good size. And so they tend to go whale hunting. And some of them get hooked on those big dollar sales and never do bring their offerings down. So I think recognizing that scale into the smaller organization is very important, is something that needs to be talked about quite a bit more. Another thing that we're beginning to understand more and more and more is that while our employees are out working from their homes, their home networks are part of the corporate infrastructure. And we're seeing a lot of different ways of dealing with that, but it's still not being talked about. You can talk about it in meetings, but you weren't seeing it talked about on the show floor very much. And I think there's a real opportunity. And I suspect that in the coming 24 months, we're going to see more companies being willing to talk about that, because all of a sudden you don't just have to protect your network core, you have to protect your employees' home network and often everyone who's a user at their home. And that's a different scale.
Right. Yeah, I think it would be a really interesting topic to go kind of into the differences between what enterprises feel are important, you know, versus SMB. I saw a recent survey talking about enterprises are really focused on digital transformation, cloud, and SMBs are really focused on people. And so, like, they're obviously different priorities, different focus on security. And so I think it's a very interesting topic. Unfortunately, we're running too low on time. So we, of course, you know, time flies when you're having fun. But you know, before we run out of time, Vittorio, I want to give you a chance to maybe tell the folks at home, maybe they can learn a little bit more about Auth0, maybe some of your stuff that you're doing. Anything you want to plug?
Absolutely. Like, you know that now we are a big family with Okta, and it's okta.com, auth0.com. Are both excellent places to start. And if you want a bit of a concierge experience, you can find me on Twitter. And usually if you tweet and mention me, I cannot not answer because everyone will know. Whereas instead, if you send me an email, I can ignore it and no one will know. So I suggest that if you want to know more about any of the things that we spoke about in here or about how Okta and Auth0 do identity, please feel free to ping me there, and I'll be happy to route you accordingly.
Fantastic. Well, thanks again for being here. We really appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me.
Well, folks, you've done it again. You sat through another hour of the best dang enterprise and IT podcast in the universe. So definitely tune your podcatcher to Twiat. We're on all of your streams, so definitely check that out. I want to make sure I thank everyone who makes this show possible, especially to my co-host, Mr. Curtis Franklin. Curtis, it's great seeing you, my friend. I'm glad you're back safe. What can people look forward to in the coming weeks from you? Maybe where they can find you and where can they get a hold of you?
Well, this weekend they could find me napping. Because I plan to do a lot of that after this week at RSA, and especially since I'm out again on Monday heading to the Splunk Conf in Las Vegas. Looking forward to that. I'll be tweeting from that, talking about that. I have a couple of major projects that I'll be publishing between now and mid-July. And then in the first week of August, I'll be heading to Black Hat. Now, a couple of quick things to note. In 2 weeks, I'll be hosting a webinar where we're looking at what you do about a supply chain breach once it's inside. So go to darkreading.com/Omdia. You can find the sign in. It's a free webinar. Please register and come and see that. And the other is at Black Hat on Tuesday of that week. There's going to be an Omdia Analyst Summit. Since I'm an Omdia analyst, I'll be speaking, as will all my colleagues. We'll have, towards the end of the day, roundtables, group discussions. And if you're going to Black Hat, that is free. And once again, you can go to darkreading.com/Omdia and find the sign up for that. Would love to have anyone who's going to be at Black Hat show up and take part in the Omdia Analyst Summit.
Thank you, Curtis. We're looking forward to that. Appreciate you being here. Well, folks, we also have to thank you as well. You're the person who drops in each and every week to get your enterprise and IT goodness. And we'll make it easy for you to watch our show and get your enterprise and IT news. So go to our show page right now, twit.tv/Twiat. There you'll find all the amazing back episodes, the show notes, the co-host information, the guest information, and of course, the links to the stories we do during the show. But more importantly, next to those videos are there, right, of your choice there, you can get your helpful subscribe and download link. Support the show by getting your audio version, your video version of your choice. Listen on any one of your devices, of course, on any one of your podcast applications, because we're on all of them. So definitely subscribe and support the show. Plus, you may have also heard, that's right, Club Twit. It's a members-only ad-free podcast service with a bonus Twit Plus feed that you can't get anywhere else. And it's only $7 a month. Really awesome. And there's lots of great things about it. In fact, one is exclusive access to a members-only Discord channel. You can chat with the hosts, the producers, separate discussion channels. Plus, we also have a lot of special events on there as well. Of course, you can also get that no ads. That's right. Definitely check that out. Join Club Twit and be part of the movement. Go to twit.tv/Club Twit. Now, also, Club Twit offers corporate group plans as well. That's right. It's a great way to give your team access to the ad-free podcasts that we do. The plans start with 5 members at a discounted rate of just $6 each per month, and you can add as many seats as you like. It's a really great way for your IT departments, your developers, your tech teams, your PMs, your salespeople to really stay on top of all of our podcasts. And just like the regular memberships out there, they can join the Twit Discord server and get that Twit Plus bonus feed as well. So have them join and be part of Club Twit, twit.tv/Club Twit. Now, after you subscribe, share with your friends, your family members, your coworkers, give them the gift of Twiat, because we talk a lot about fun tech topics. We have a lot of great guests on the show, and I can guarantee they find it fun and interesting as well. So definitely give them the gift of Twiat. Now, after you subscribe and you're available on Friday, 1:30 p.m. Pacific, we do this show live at live.twit.tv. Come see how the pizza's made, the behind the scenes, the banter, the fun that we have here on Twit. So definitely check that out. Of course, you're going to join this live stream. You might as well join the live IRC channel as well. That's why we have a lot of great characters in there, irc.twit.tv to join. And we have, we get great topics. We talk about really fun things in there. We talk about my eyebrow movement for some reason. So we talk about fun things in there. So thank you, everybody, for being there and being part of the live stream. Now, also, I want you to hit me up on Twitter. Just like Vittorio said, it's a great place to get in touch with me and maybe even give me some show ideas. You can direct message me, talk about any enterprise tech topics you want, we have a lot of fun on there. So definitely hit me up on there. Plus, also, if you want to see what I do in my normal work week at Microsoft, check out developers.microsoft.com/office. There we post all the latest, greatest ways you can customize your office experience and make it more productive for you. I want to thank all who makes the show possible, especially thank you to Leo and Lisa. They continue to support This Week in Enterprise Tech each and every week, and we couldn't do the show without them. So thank you, Leo and Lisa, for all your support over the years. Of course, all the engineers and staff at Twit. But I also want to thank Mr. Brian Chiebert. He's not only our co-host, but he's also our tireless producer. He does all the show bookings and the plannings for the show, and we really couldn't do this show without him. So thank you, Chiebert, for all your support. Now, before we sign out, we have to thank our editor, Mr. Anthony. He makes us look good after the show. Thank you, Anthony, for all your help. Plus, our TD for today, he's the talented Mr. Ant Pruitt. He does a fabulous, amazing show called Hands On Photography. So definitely check that out. Ant, what's going on this week on Hands On Photography?
Well, Mr. Liu, I like to sell my photos online. And you know what? Some of our Hands On Photography listeners were curious about getting into selling their own photos. So this week on the show, we talked about how to get your photos printed, where you can get them out to people and have some nice gifts for people that, you know, that want some nice, beautiful art that you create. So twit.tv/hop.
Fantastic. Well, thank you, Ann. Well, until next time, I'm Louis Maresca, just around you. If you want to know what's going on in the enterprise, just keep quiet.
If you are looking for a midweek update on the week's tech news, I got to tell you, you got to check out Tech News Weekly. See, it's all kind of built in there with the title. You get to learn about the news in tech that matters. Every Thursday, Jason Howell and I talk to the people making and breaking the tech news, get their insights and their interesting stories. It's a great show to check out. twit.tv/TNW.